right, so today we got Andy Delmore, good friend of mine. Andy, I got to talk into this microphone. I'm not used to hosting this. I'm usually just the guy that yaps. So Andy,
who's usually the host?
Eric.
You taking the day off? Okay.
Yeah, he controls things and he just guides me. So it's all right. It's all good. So anyways, Andy's a good friend of mine. When I moved to Windsor back, I don't even know what, probably 95, 96. Andy was at the peak of his hockey career. You're playing in Philadelphia at the time. You're just breaking in. Right.
What year was it? Last year, junior, 95, 96. I still would have been in junior, I think. 96, 97, first year pro, I believe.
Yeah.
Yeah, it's right in that last year, junior, first year pro area for sure.
Yeah, so I would have started my business back in 2000.
Yep.
So then you were just making your mark there. So
yeah,
exactly. Heard of you, never met you, and all that stuff. And then we met the first time I think that we met was actually at one of my skill skates.
Yep.
That's the first time you came out. You guys did a lot of your stuff, and then you came out that year. It was just at the end of your career.
Yeah, it was close, getting close to the end there, and I figured why not start now with some skill stuff?
Yeah. You know what's funny, though? I don't know if you remember this. After about 40 minutes or whatever, you yelled at me, you go, "Pogger! This shit works!"
It was working. I had a tough time. I remember telling you, I had a tough time stick handling, not skating. I remember telling you, I'm like, man, why am I just standing here stick handling? I don't run the half wall. Like, I need to be moving and stick handling. It just seemed to make more sense to me, and it was more fluid with the arms. And yeah, I get it. You want to pull and drag and bring it out, one hand, two. I got all that. But why am I doing it while I'm not skating? Because as we all know, skating is a massive part of the game.
Yeah, it's huge. Yeah. So when you were, when I met you, I want to go back and I'm just going to go through like a little bit of your hockey and then we're going to kind of backtrack. So
sure.
You, fifth round to North Bay, right?
Yep.
Okay. So fifth round to North Bay Centennials at the time.
Yep.
And then you played there. You played in Sarnia. You played, and then you were a free agent to Philly.
Yep.
Okay. So I got it all right. When you played in Philly, you had the big playoffs where you had a hat trick and an overtime goal against Pittsburgh.
Yep.
So that was awesome to see someone around here have a night like that or a playoff like that.
I blacked out for a week or two there.
Well, what a feeling that was, man.
Yeah, like it was something else.
Yeah. So if anybody wants to look that up, just type in Andy Delmore playoff. That's probably the first thing that comes up. And then
my dad won't take it down. He posted it on YouTube.
For sure.
I'm just kidding. It wasn't him, though.
For sure.
I did tell that guy on YouTube. I said, please don't ever take that down.
Yeah, of course not, man.
He wrote right back like 30 seconds later.
That's the best.
He was a big Philly fan. He loved it.
And then so you spent some time in Nashville, a little bit of Buffalo, Columbus, and then you went over to Europe to play. Italy, Germany, and Austria.
Norway.
Norway. They're all over the place.
Yeah, there were some stickers on the suitcase there.
Yep. Yep. And then after done hockey, you started coaching, and this is where our relationship got maybe a little bit tighter because you were assistant coach with the Sarnia Sting.
Yep.
He brought me over there quite a few times to do some skill stuff with Letowski's team, you and
yep.
Trevor Letowski. And then you coached as assistant coach in Toledo for the Walleye, East Coast League.
Don't forget the 1 year
Windsor,
at the University of Windsor.
University of Windsor. Oh, yeah, that's right. That's right, yeah. And then currently now with the Windsor Spitfires as an assistant coach.
Yep.
So awesome. So that's a lot of hockey and you are about 46 now?
I am 46, yep.
Okay, so you and I are similar in that way because I'm 54, just turned 54. I know. It's brutal. But
can we say old balls?
I'm starting to feel it now.
Yeah,
well. Yeah, starting to feel it. But anyways, we got the one thing in common, we've been doing this since we were probably about two. Or three.
Yeah,
or
it's,
four.
Yeah, whenever it just kind of escalated to where we're at now. And the funny thing is, like, you know, growing up in Windsor, you know, hockey for me wasn't the number one growing up.
I'm glad you're saying this because this is part of the deal here.
You know, I was a huge baseball guy and there was very little summer hockey. There was maybe the odd power skating I remember, but it was like a day thing, like a day power skating camp. Like, that's all it was. So, you know, even all through high school, like grade, you know, 9, 10, I ran track. You know, I played high school baseball. I played high school football. Like, it was just something, like, don't get me wrong, I loved hockey. There's, but I just, I'm a huge sports fan in general, like, not just hockey. So leading into your question, I would assume about multi-sports. I loved it all the way through, and I still do.
Yeah. That was kind of where I was going next, was growing up here. I was going to ask you about the hockey, but I want to stick on that stuff. So you said that hockey was important to you, but it was just one of your sports that you played, basically.
For sure.
Yeah. So growing up, did you have the mindset that you wanted to play in the NHL, or was it like you were so young you didn't even know, you're just playing sports?
It wasn't that I wanted to. It's that I dreamed of it. It wasn't a want. It was more of just a far-fetched dream that, I kind of related to, you know, my dad. We'd be downstairs and he'd be like, okay, you only get to stay up to the end of the second period. You know, that was it. And like, it was just like, go to bed. Or the national anthem would come on and he'd be like, okay, stand up. So I guess I kind of dreamed that I'd be standing on that blue line one day, dreaming of it, not really wanting it, but just the thought of it, I guess.
Yeah. Like a lot of kids, I was kind of the same thing.
Yeah.
Hockey. And I was very similar to you. It was hockey, baseball. And the same thing back, I was from Sudbury. Same thing.
So you played baseball for a month.
Played baseball for a month. And then the rest of the summer we went skidooing.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah, so we it was the same thing. We love sports, yeah. And now same exact thing is like I couldn't wait to play hockey. Love shooting my pucks, did all that kind of stuff. But it was like it was always self driven, right? I had a couple brothers, always self driven. Never dad saying, you know, did you shoot your pucks? My parents didn't know any different. They knew I was good in hockey. We played all the sports, loved the sports, and it was great. And I think at the end of the day, it made a big difference in just becoming a better athlete.
For sure. I remember nights in the basement, much like in here with the cinder block walls, that's what our basement was. And, you know, I can be honest with you, there wasn't even like tape on the wall for the net. There was nothing. I would take a puck and make a mark on the wall of the net. Like, that's just what it was. That was your net. Shoot it inside the puck marks. Like, how crazy is that?
My mom sprinted gold paint, the same cinder block, gold paint with our names on it.
Yeah.
So there's one for Andy, one for Darryl, one for Ray.
Yeah, just shot pucks for hours. And
hours.
Like you said, like nobody was really, if I came up, nobody said, hey, get back down there. It was just, okay, just go back down and shoot more. It was fun. Somehow that was fun to me.
Yeah, it was for sure. We didn't have a lot of distractions either, right? Makes a big difference. So I think I'm going to stick on that. So obviously you're current with what kids do today.
I think I am.
So what's your perspective on what kids do? And tell me what you think of it. Or do you think it's necessary? Like, go down a rabbit hole if you want.
Of what age group and what what caliber would you say of the rabbit hole do you want this?
Well, I pick an age.
Okay, I'll pick a kid that's 15, let's say 15 years old, getting ready for his minor midget year. I would say that might be a little bit of crunch time where you need to decide on what's going on. Instead of baseball, you might want to get in here at Power Tech and do some stuff. You might want to go that route at that age. But up till then, I think you could be multi-sport, multi-everything, right? But I think once that minor midget year comes, I think you might have to pick then. You know, for me, it was a little bit later. I tell the story after my first year junior in North Bay. I actually played baseball in North Bay because I had to finish school there. So a kid in my class was like, hey, do you play any ball? You're from Windsor. You must. So I ended up playing on a team called Team North. It was Sault Ste. Marie, Sudbury, and North Bay. We played in a tournament at the Sky Dome that summer. So, yeah, I could do it a little bit later, but I think in this day and age with the way the training is, the speed, you know, you can use, all the stick handling tools, whatever it is, the treadmill and all this stuff. I think at that age you might want to pick, or, you know, maybe dedicate a little bit more time to.
100%.
That's so, where I would go with that.
Yeah. So this is like, it's so funny because I asked that knowing your answer basically without talking to you, because we come from, well, the funny thing is that you're in the business still. I'm in the business too, but you're coaching kids that are signed NHL players. You're relatively just out of hockey as a player, like in the last 10 years, right?
Yeah, I think it's around there now.
Yeah. So, I mean, that's relatively close. It's not like you're out of date. Like, you know, it's not 30 years and things have changed that much. And you're looking at kids that have just been drafted to you and stuff like that. And it's so funny that you say that, because you're correct. Like, for the most part, you're correct. Now, people have their beliefs and all that kind of stuff, and that's fine. But, dude, people start worrying about hockey.
I know.
Nah, I wouldn't say five, but it's like, is it going to ruin my development if I do this? They start specializing. You start seeing at 8, 9, 10, and you see mom and dads.
It's tough. I have some friends that have, I'm not going to mention their names, but I think they know who they are, because I tell them to wake up and just let the kids have fun and play. Like, it's okay, man. It's okay if you miss a week. Go on vacation. You don't have to worry. It's okay. That's March break. Oh, I have a tournament. Shut up. It's okay. You can go. It's not the end of the world. And I guess they just want to keep up with the keeping up. Like, if Johnny doesn't go, well, how about it? Then he's going to be back behind this guy. Come on, guys. It's going to be okay.
It's amazing.
It is crazy.
It's amazing.
It's crazy.
So, and then it's the parents on that side that just, they go nuts.
And we all know the percentage, right?
I do.
Like, we all know it.
I think people know the number, but why don't I think they're good in math.
Okay. It's not that hard. It's, the number is under 10. It's a single digit, for God's sakes. You should be able to see a single number and say, oh, this is, you know, like, don't get me wrong. I'm the most grateful, and I still can't believe it. Some days when I wake up and somebody says, hey, can I have your autograph at 46? And I'm like, oh my God, I get it. But that number is so minuscule that, like you said, they need to really not just look at the number and hear it, but actually process that number and realize that it is fun. And our kids are developing social skills, teamwork, all that's going to lead into something else in life. And I think that's a major part that we all miss, is we got to develop these kids, not just for hockey. It goes on to work, to this, to everything. So it's a big part of it.
It's a huge part of it. And that's, we just did a podcast yesterday, and we just talked about that. Like if you're looking at, I know your girls don't play, right?
My little one might.
Okay.
She's got that little, I call her the little animal. She's got a little bit in her, we'll see.
Yeah.
We'll see. She just did power skating, can skate this past year, and she was just, was flying by people by the end.
Yeah.
So
yeah,
there's a chance for her. My oldest one, she's a little artistic, kind of artsy fartsy, kind of like her mom, but that's okay.
Yeah. So, but okay, you take either of those. Like when we did our podcast the other day, so I was explaining for my kid, why did I get my kid to play hockey? Well, it was because look at my life.
Yeah.
Of course, right? If I'm a plumber, he's going to want to probably fix a toilet with me or something.
Yeah.
Right?
Yeah.
His shit goes downhill, right? I think. So, anyways, he was around it his whole life, so of course he asked, and then he went out there and he wanted to be around hockey all the time. But when he got into it, I was saying to Eric yesterday, it's like there was one side of me was like, yes, and the other side was like, no, right? And no, you know what
sure,
I'm saying.
For sure.
Because there's a lot of hurt along the way.
There can be a lot of negatives as well. And we're not going to try and touch on those today, because we're going to try and be as positive as we can, you know, but there is a lot of heartache and drama and politics, and we could go on and on with the list of negatives. But
no, it's all good. So my point to this was, like, I was glad that he wanted to play a sport, because if he wasn't going to play a sport, he's going to do something. If he came to me and said, I want to play a piano, I would have went, well, that's weird, but okay. Anyways,
you're going to be good at it. We're going to try and make you the best at it.
Yeah, and he's gonna do it. But what I was so happy about with hockey was exactly those reasons, right? It's like, as a dad, it was okay. He's going to play some sport. He's probably going to make some friends. He's probably going to keep himself busy. The friends he makes are probably going to be the ones that aren't hanging out late at night doing stupid things. He's going to probably make some social skills, and he's going to learn maybe when something doesn't go his way that, you know, that was maybe a bad balance, but the bad balance doesn't mean life sucks and you can blame everybody. Like it was an opportunity to be a good dad. And then as he got older, it was like Friday night, because he was becoming a pretty good hockey player. It was like, okay, so then we nudged a little, go do this. But like Friday night dance would come along. I use that as an example all the time. And he'd say, yeah, everyone's going to the dance. And it'd be like, okay, that's cool. But okay, you got a game on tomorrow, the next day. It's up to you. What do you want to do? Do you want to get some sleep? Do you want to go to the dance? And he goes, yeah, you know what? And he always made better decisions. So from my perspective, it was always being easier to be a good dad, because I would use hockey as a vehicle. Yeah,
it was laid out there for you.
Right on. So, yeah. And that's the reason why you want your kids in sports or involved in something, isn't it?
Well, I think it definitely helps for sure.
Yeah.
You know, it teaches a lot of skills that, you know, that dedication, there's sacrifice, there's so many different aspects of what sports can do for you.
Yeah. So that was great. And then when he was like, once he realized that he could probably do something with hockey, and he asked me, Dad, he was in minor bantam, so the year before that you talked about, and he played here, like he was at Power Tech all the time,
yeah,
right.
Yeah.
We'd go to the track, and he played lacrosse and all these things. But by the time he was 14, that year was minor bantam year. He goes, Dad, I think I'm okay, right? Do you think I can do this? And I said, I actually, by the way you're playing now, I think that you can if you work hard. And that's when he decided that,
yeah,
he was going to,
it was time
working, yeah, out and the whole bit. And he watched what he ate and all that kind of stuff. So,
you know, which is still pretty early. Like, you know, it's, you know, that's still pretty early.
You're not there yet, but because he's a late birthday, as you probably know.
Yeah.
And when he moved to Guelph at 15 years old, like he's my best buddy.
Yeah. Yeah. Yeah.
And I dropped him off at his billet house. We were wonderful. And it was like, talk about emotions.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
And I'm like, I don't really have emotions because I played for Billaforge.
You're numb.
Kind of numb. But it was like, wow, that was a different thing. And but that's where you grew up, and that's what he wanted to do. And it's like, that's, I think a lot of times what parents don't realize is that kind of stuff. It's like, it always looks good to play for the Windsor Spitfires. Like, wow, he plays for the Windsor Spitfires. But when you come from Kingston, that's a long ways away.
I agree.
As a 16-year-old kid, yeah, right?
I moved to Chatham at 15,
yep,
to play junior B, you know, 45 minutes, an hour down the road, and it felt like it was 8 hours.
For sure.
100%. You know, there was nobody there. It was like, what do you do?
Yeah.
Different.
What? So when you played hockey as a youth, because I think I knew, but you played up until, like before you went away to junior B. What was your route?
So I was in Sandwich West, which is now LaSalle.
Yeah.
So it was called Sandwich West Township.
Big team, probably.
What's that?
A lot of kids trying out for that team.
There wasn't tryouts. I'll leave it at that. So in LaSalle, obviously, it was called Sandwich West back then. There was probably about, I would say, 12,000 people in that west suburb. And we were a single-A hockey team. We would play Windsor Double A. We'd go to Bell River, Leamington, Chatham, Harrow.
Never left the area.
That's just what you did. And even if I wanted to play, let's just say Windsor Triple A said, hey, you know, we'd like you to come play for us. I couldn't. I lived in Sandwich West. There was no cross-border shopping. It was wherever you lived, that's where you played. And I always tell the story about Ryan Pollock, a good friend of mine that was arguably the best player in my age group around here. Yeah. He had an uncle that lived in Detroit. So he ended up playing for Little Caesars using that address. Yeah. So there was a lot of things you had to do if you wanted to move, unlike today. And I didn't know any better. It was the way it was. Played single A hockey all the way up.
Yeah.
It was fine.
So right up?
Yeah.
Unreal.
It was just the way it was. And it's funny, from my team, from that, my age group, my team, one scholarship to Bowling Green, another guy, OHL, so three of us, basically, one scholarship and two OHL guys from a single A hockey team. And a few of the others played junior B. Like there was a couple other guys, junior B, junior C, which is unbelievable. Like to me.
It is unbelievable.
Yeah.
It is unbelievable. Like you didn't know. And then my next question was that like you were obviously, maybe I'm wrong, but you were obviously like a great player in youth hockey.
I'm trying to think of what age. I would say I was run of the mill till checking started.
And then you took off.
And then I kind of, it kind of separated everything there. And that was Pee Wee, right? Remember, yep. It was back then, it was Pee Wee.
Yeah, I've never played without it.
Back, well, you're from, where men are men and moose are nervous. So Pee Wee, actually first year Pee Wee, okay. But that second year Pee Wee was when it kind of took off and I grew a foot. I was 5'1", I went to 6'1", in 1 year. So everything kind of just translated over that 1 year of checking, getting bigger. Then it went from there.
And then your dad, as a hockey dad, would he just enjoy watching it, or he's like, it got, he was into it?
No, there was, I can remember one conversation. And so my dad was a Windsor police officer, pretty stern, I would say is the right word, stern but fair. He was the guy that would take his lunch break, come to the rink, tap on the glass with his billy club so I could know he was there. You could just hear it. Ding, 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 ding. And I remember the one time coming back from Leamington, he was trying to be my coach in the car, you know, like this. And I remember saying, Dad, you need to shut the fuck up. I have two coaches. I've already heard it from them. And I think when I said the F word in front of him, it was my first time ever saying that word in front of him or to him. And he realized, okay, it's time for me to be a fan and just help. But up till then, we had our moments, just like any other relationship with your parents, you know. But that was the day where he realized that, okay, I'm done now, and you know, let's play it out.
Yeah. So the reason that I asked those questions was because, like, so I don't even know if I clarified this with you earlier. Is when we started this podcast, I was doing all my stuff and I'd have guys work for me and then try to leave and do other things. So I was like, okay, you guys do that. And then I was just getting very frustrated with the conversations that I have on an obviously daily basis with parents. And the questions are all those things. When do I move up? How much training do I need to do? And I could see the evolution of what it's more common that it's less common to have a dad like me and your dad was like to say, okay, let's just let it go and not worry about every little thing. So that's why I wanted to see if your dad was pushy. And the reason I'm saying it this way is because,
and do we know really the right answers?
Well, that's the other thing.
like,
are you saying like, is being a pushy dad maybe good or maybe it's like, wrong, or
we don't know.
We don't know.
Like I try and like every kid's different. Every parent's different. And I don't know if there's a right or wrong time to start, time to talk to your kid. Like, I really don't know. Like, to be honest.
It's a fair question.
Like, so I could just imagine these dads talking to you, asking you questions, and you're trying to give him what you think. And, you know, it could be interesting because we don't know, really. We think we know. And we can give advice and help, but you know, like I said, everybody's at a different learning curve, and you know, everybody's stronger at a certain point, and it's a big round circle that just goes around sometimes.
Yeah, but it's interesting how you said it though, because it was like you were like actually, your story is a perfect story for people that aren't the superstars early, because there's so many kids that their parents are worried about. I got to get on this spring hockey team. Well, you never did it. I never did it. We can both skate pretty good.
Okay. Another great story.
Okay. I love it.
I finally made this spring hockey team. It was called Ontario South, I think it was called. It was basically Kitchener to here. So a guy from Windsor actually put this together. And so we're going to go play in Minnesota in this massive spring tournament. Like, we had raised money, we had done all this. So those tryouts were kind of during the winter, made this team. So this tournament's basically, I would say, I want to say end of May, June-ish, end of May, June-ish for the spring tournament. Well, sure enough, baseball, I'm in. Like, it's crazy. So we actually made it to the Little League World Series from Turtle Club, LaSalle. So I had to call this Ontario guy, Hawk Spring Hockey, and tell him I couldn't go to this tournament.
Broke his heart.
Broke his heart. But I was baseball. Yeah, like,
it's baseball time.
It was crazy. Yeah,
it's baseball time.
Like, speaking about spring hockey, yeah, and all these parents that are crazy about it.
Yeah.
But
yeah,
it's funny sometimes. Yeah.
What's that? So you probably wouldn't believe me if I told you how many people on a daily basis or a weekly basis say, like, we're thinking of moving to here. We're thinking of moving to here. And the kids are like average. And then the other thing you said was that you grew a foot.
Yeah.
Go before your draft year or junior B year.
It was grade like grade 7 to grade 8,
yeah,
I believe.
Yeah. Yeah,
whatever age.
So that's like all these people. Like this. So my point of all this is, like, when we talk to parents, it's like hopefully some of it makes sense to them, that some of the decisions that they're making or when they're thinking about things is they take a lot of things into consideration. So, like, you don't necessarily, and I'll go to another point on this in a second, but you don't necessarily have to play on the best team to be a good player.
No.
Or to get noticed. You don't have to, like, when you're making all these decisions before there was hitting, like you said, you were average. And this is a big thing, right?
I would say average for sure.
Yeah.
Yeah, I had some skill. Like, you know, I had a good shot. I always had that. But, you know, I was a little scared out there. Just a little bit. Just enough for me to shy away until I got bigger and realized that, or not that I realized, how I learned how to take a hit, give a hit, and kind of manipulate the game because I was able to at 6'1", not 5'1". You know? And back then, let's not kid ourselves. So when you were minor peewee, there was no, it was minor and major mixed. So there was always the kids a year older that were coming to get you. And then obviously it's changed since then where you actually have minor, major, and it goes. But back then it was all together.
Yeah.
Peewee was peewee.
Yeah. You got it to play a year up. You got to get a letter from the Prime Minister. It's unbelievable. Yeah, so it's like, I think that's a really important thing that we talked about there is that, you know, a lot of people get really, really excited about their kids.
Which is okay.
100%. Enjoy it.
Enjoy it. Yeah.
But things can change rapidly. And, like, you were a good example of that once there was hitting, you physically matured and where that superstar might not have. I was at a tournament. This is, said this before, but I was at a tournament when I was in Major Peewee. Yeah, Major Peewee. All Ontarios. So we played this team from Thunder Bay. And when we went to tournaments, it was always like, I'd look around to see if anybody I got to watch for because, I was the guy, right? I was the guy going.
Yeah, you got to do your homework a little bit.
Yeah. So we'd watch games, and it wasn't very often I'd get impressed by somebody as a player. So we were watching this game, and it was Thunder Bay playing. There's this defenseman. And you know when you see a player? And I was like, whoa. Okay, there's the guy I got to keep up to now. I found him.
And be aware when he's on the ice.
Oh, yeah, but you just sit there and you go, wow. Like he skated like you did. You're a great skater, right? He skated like you, and you stuck out like a sore thumb. So I was watching him, and he won the MVP of the Ontario Championships out there. That's like I played against Shanahan and Marchman and all those guys, right? Yeah. So this guy was head and shoulders. His name is Mike Ricciardi, okay? And it was like best player I've ever seen, ever in my life. So we went to a tournament in the Sioux following year. Thunder Bay was playing. I said, I got to get to the rink. I got to watch this guy. So I'm watching warm-ups. I'm going, where is this guy? Where the hell is he? He was playing. Couldn't notice him.
One year later.
So he wants to hit puberty or whatever. Never heard of him ever again. Best player I've ever seen.
You got two. All of a sudden, he's got two left feet.
Something. I don't know. Did something. It was weird. So anyways, for parents and kids, it's like it's good to be a good young player, and it's awesome and enjoy it and all that stuff. But like things can change rapidly, and then when we get to the junior ranks, I mean, there's a whole different ball game, right?
It can happen even quicker there sometimes.
Yeah. So, in your opinion, I wanted to ask you about the OHL again. One more thing. When you played in North Bay,
uh-huh,
you had Bert Keppelton,
yeah,
right?
Yeah.
Okay, so I put that there for a note because I played for Bill LaForge,
mm-hmm,
and there's a lot of stories about these guys. Now, I don't need stories, but what I wanted to ask you was, when you go into the OHL back, like I started in '85, And you were in 94 or 5, right?
Yeah, I believe 93, 94. I think.
Things were handled a lot differently.
Oh, yeah. Yeah.
So when you come out of Chatham and LaSalle and you go to North Bay and you got Burt Templeton, probably didn't give you a hug, right? Was a good coach.
I thought he was amazing.
He is amazing.
I think obviously his demeanor probably wouldn't fly right now. I would say that pretty positively. But he was a really good guy. And you knew that. He treated people.
So you knew he cared.
He did care.
About making you the best player you possibly could. That's what he cared about.
You felt that.
Yeah.
He may have never said it or anything like that, but you knew that he cared.
Yeah.
And when he said, you know, my first year was tough. Yeah. I didn't play a lot.
What a shocker to you to have a coach like that intense? That
No, really.
Yeah.
No, it wasn't. It didn't shock me. I had some pretty tough ones through the years. Even in the year before in Junior B it was pretty tough too there. One got fired because he was probably too tough. So I wasn't surprised at that, but he just made you feel like that you were part of it, even though I wasn't. Like I was 7th D, I'd take the odd shift on forward, I'd come back. But, you know, he was great. Like he was the guy that if I was on the ice an hour after practice, you know, he'd just come pop his head out and just say, "Hey, keep her going, it looks great." Like he just made you feel like you were doing the right things.
Yeah.
As hard as he was,
yeah,
he was fair.
But I think it was probably just knowing his personality, you got that because you put the effort in.
Like yeah.
He knew that you cared.
For sure.
Yeah.
It was a mutual thing.
Yeah. Yeah. Because a guy like that, if you're not giving it 100 plus 1%, he's not thrilled to death with you, right?
No, but I understand why now as a coach. Why would you want to give your best to a player if he's just loafing around and uncommitted, doesn't off ice, doesn't do this, not a good person, you know? Why would I, you know, it's give and take, right?
100%.
Yeah.
Yeah. So after your junior career, you spent 4 years, you didn't get drafted.
No, undrafted. Yep.
Okay. So what was going through your head at that point? Because you probably felt like you should have been?
I was rated in the third round. I actually went to the draft in Edmonton, which was
really
a real fun day.
And new suit.
Let's. She was new.
Yeah, she was new.
And let's not forget, back then, it was a good old 14 rounder, too, or 12 at least, I think it was. It wasn't 7 like now. Yeah. There's an extra 5 rounds to sit there and get pissed
made
on.
Made it last. Yeah.
The one thing I will say, obviously, besides the disappointment and family disappointment and, you know, the questions, I did get a call from John Ferguson the next day. He was in with part of Ottawa at that point. This is John Ferguson Sr. Called me, invited me to training camp the next day after, and kind of said to me, like, "I don't know how you didn't get drafted, whatever, whatever."
Did and you ask him, "Why did you take me in the 14th?
No. Actually, the best part about this whole 14th round, kid from Sarnia gets drafted, this guy, Chris George. So the guy goes up to the mic, 14th round, Colorado, like to select from the Sarnia Sting. I kind of gave a little whoop.
Of course.
Chris George, I was like, oh boy. Yeah, it's just gave
10
the parents
o'clock on
okay,
a Saturday
let's
night.
Get out of here.
Yeah.
But the undrafted thing, it'll put a chip on your shoulder though.
Is that what it did for you?
It did.
Yeah.
And it made me realize that it's still a long ways away and you just got to continue to work. And I think I had one of the best summers in the gym ever that summer. You know, I went from 170 to 190, and it was like a real good 20. Like it was.
Yeah, it wasn't. Fast. It wasn't fat.
No, it was faster, stronger, and it made me. That next year, I remember mentally just knowing that I put in the work. It made me mentally stronger for that next year. Just coming into a game, knowing that,
not that I was going to dominate, but that's what I thought in my head. Like, why not now? So, yeah.
Did you? So after that, you went to Ottawa. Did you went back to Sarnia for?
Went back
year?
To Sarnia, yeah. And then
that was a good year.
It was a good year. Yeah. The following year, I went to St. Louis's training camp. Had a great camp. They wanted me to head to their AHL team on a tryout, but I decided to head back to Sarnia for my overage year instead. And then I ended up getting a entry-level contract from Philly at the end of my overage year.
Yeah, okay, that's what it was.
Yeah, yeah.
So that was great. Yeah,
so my D partner was actually drafted by Philly, so they were around quite
Who
a bit.
Was that?
This guy, what's his name? Shane Kenny.
Okay.
Big, massive, left-handed D-man. Yeah. Threw his both hands. Just yep. throwback player.
Yeah.
But anyways, he had some off-the-ice issues, to say the least.
Yeah.
So basically, I got his contract minus the bonus. It's like, that's kind of how it worked out.
Yeah.
So that's how it all kind of started from there.
Yeah. So that's awesome. Yeah, it's hard to, you know, you never know. Eh? There's so many kids that go through it that you'd think, wow, surprised they didn't get drafted. And some guys go the other way, right? They don't put a chip on the shoulder. They have the poor me attitude. No, you were such a good skater.
That comes
man.
From a lot of things, though, the chip, right? I don't know if it's how I was raised or just I wanted it more. Or, you know, there's lots. We'll probably never know. I'll never know why it went
yeah.
like that.
Yeah.
But I definitely took it the right way. And, you know, I had some good people to help me. Like I said, with that gym year was massive.
Yeah.
And then, you know, Mark Hunter, I give a lot of credit to, who was my coach in Sarnia. He was a
good man, eh?
Great guy.
I know. I like him.
Great guy.
I've had the... quite a few conversations with him over the last couple of years. He's a good man.
Yeah. So he really helped
knows
me.
His shit.
Oh, yeah. He helped me with the, you know, some of the, I don't know. I just played it like knowing who I was out against or, you know, when to jump, when not to jump, like end of a game, just more situational hockey play that I never used to even realize. Like, hey, last minute, you don't have to throw the sauce, bud. You can chuck it off the window and everything will be fine. And, you know, but back then, nobody really talked. It was like, yeah, just make the play. But, you know, that situational hockey helped me big time.
Yeah. That's so funny because, like, a lot of parents will talk about coaching, like, when they're young, how they don't have good coaches and they need better coaching and stuff like that. But I say, this is honest. I don't know if Bert, I think he had assistant coaches when I played. But my first year, Sudbury Wolves, Wayne Maxner was our coach and our GM, not another coach.
Video coach, assistant coach,
yeah.
goaltending coach,
yeah.
strength and conditioning
skills
coach.
Skills coach, mental toughness coach.
yeah,
that's what we have now. And in fact, I was telling this one day, I was because I was skills coach when Boogie was running the Spits.
Mm-hmm.
So I was on the ice one day, and it was very funny because Bundy came on the ice that night, day two. That's Warren Reichel. So I was on there, and I was running a skills thing. So Jonesy jumps on. And then DJ Smith jumps on because they're all coaching at the time. Boogie jumps on. Bundy jumps on. The goalie coach jumps on. And I asked Jonesy, I go, Jonesy, do you remember back? Because I played against him when he was in the Sioux. So how many coaches did you have when you played?
You got five plus a spare.
100%. So we're laughing. He goes, I know. I was just thinking the same thing. He goes, we got you plus four or five other That's coaches crazy. Out here. I said, we had one. So it was like this guy ran the whole ship. And so my point to that was like, we didn't actually learn hockey. We didn't. There's no systems. It was work hard, be tough. Work hard, be tough. That's all we
Stop,
ever had.
Start, yep. hit the net.
Yep. Yeah. That's it. That's it. So now, you're coaching in the OHL now. Not that you would have known what coaching is, but like now it's detailed teaching.
It's like different.
Yeah.
It's different for sure. I wish I could go back a little bit.
In what way?
Just that simplification of hitting the net. Like, we don't talk about it enough. Just getting
like pucked. Just like right now, as you coaching, talking to your players, hit the net. Is that what you mean?
Yeah.
Yeah, it's pretty important.
It doesn't seem to be said enough, though. We're always worried about, oh, where's your toe caps? Are they facing the wall? Like, it's okay if they're the other way once in a while. It happens. But we don't talk about, you know, finishing our checks. And when we say that, just going across people, making them stop their feet. You know, we're so technical and you got to angle and do this and do that. How about you just run the guy once in a while? It's okay. You know, we've all realized it, and I know all of us in the room are watching playoff hockey. It's a different ball game right now. Huh. It's a different game.
Well, that's we did a podcast about that. I talk about any player that I play with or coach too. It's like it's awesome that you're skilled. It's awesome. It's great. It's great to see, but it's like almost every player is the same player almost.
Oh yeah. In the regular season.
In the regular season.
Yeah.
And then what are you going to do differently? And then that's where there's you got your regular season player and then you got your playoff players. And those crazy guys, enough. Yeah, it's crazy. But funny you said that about hitting the net and speaking about Mark Hunter. So I was speaking with him about 2 weeks ago, talking about a player, and he goes, yeah, there's something about I like this guy. You know, he gets shots. He gets his shots through. He hits the net. He goes, hockey's pretty easy. Just hit the net. Shoot the puck. Get him through.
Yeah.
It's like it's so funny that you talked about that because he was, you know, crazy, one of the most respected guys in hockey, to be honest. And he's just saying the simplest thing is, you know, he gets shots through and hit the net. It's pretty simple.
Yeah. The old get him out, get him in.
Yeah.
Not that hard.
Not that hard.
You know, we always try and complicate it and push the pace and got all these terms of craziness when it's basically just, can you get it out and can you get it in and go to work?
Yeah. And then, like you said, to start finishing some hits here and there. Yeah. It's not a bad thing to do.
No, it'll help you. It'll help the team.
100%. So, okay, I want to talk a little bit about your coaching. You started in Sarnia with Trevor. Great guy, by the way.
Phenomenal.
Really is. He's doing well in Montreal, right?
Yeah.
Yeah, he's doing well. Talk to him still a lot?
Yeah, yeah. He actually talked for about a half hour yesterday. He's back in town. His wife and two kids, actually, they live out this way. So, you know, he has his home base here still. So he's back here. We'll get together here next week sometime. He's got the list right now.
Yeah, you have your soda water.
Yeah, I can have some soda waters. Pee the bed again.
Yeah.
I'm just kidding.
Pee the bed again. okay, I want to just ask you about coaching. So, like, what do you like about it and why? Yeah, what do you like about it, first of all? I know the type of person you are. Like,
I think the main thing for me is it doesn't feel like work. So that is number one. I love helping young players achieve their goals and making them better people. So if you could take those two things that I just said about helping them achieve their goals and making them better people, that is my goal for them and myself. So is that considered coaching? Like, you know what I mean? Like, it's
the same answer almost that I give. People consider me a skills coach. And if you ask me what I do, that's not what I say. I say, like, my what drives me is the exact same thing as I like to, in some way, have a difference in someone's life.
For sure.
And make their life better.
Yeah.
So, because even in the Ontario Hockey League, you got a higher percentage of guys that could be professional players.
Yeah.
Well, I work with pros, I work with juniors, and I work with younger. So the percentage of kids that are going to make a living or get school paid out of hockey is very small.
We already talked about that. Yeah.
Yeah. So, right. Yeah, so it's very small. So, like, if my job is to get, if I set a goal, if I want everyone to play pro or get a scholarship, but that's not good.
It's unrealistic.
And then my relationship with people would be strictly on hockey.
Yeah.
So that's exactly what I try to do. And I get a lot of fulfillment out of that. It's to say, at the end of the day, I know I was nice to this kid, even though he wasn't the best kid on the ice. I try to find what his goals are, and I try to help him get there.
Yeah.
But it's exactly that, is give him hope. I'm not Gandhi or anything, but I do – Gandhi. I don't know. I was thinking to say Jesus Christ, but that's – I don't know. But I
okay. Or Gandhi.
Yeah, or Gandhi.
A little bit of a different vibe, but
– Yeah. But I'm not – But I really truly want the kid that I trained when he was 14, if he sees me at Tim Hortons when I'm, you know, 5 years from now and he's an adult and he's actually like, hey, coach, and he wants to talk to me. And he got something and he learned something, and that's the greatest thing. So that's a good drive right there.
Yeah, for sure. And I'll give just one example of it, just because it's really recent, is I got a text about a month ago, I guess it would be now. Wyatt Johnson was coming back to play at Little Caesars, Dallas. We had already just lost to Kitchener. Sent me a text. It was probably about 10 o'clock at night the night before the game and said, hey, I'd really like you to come to the game tomorrow. Awesome. I was like, I'll be there. I said, just leave me two tickets. I'll pay for them. Just make sure you put them away for me. Sure enough, I go to the get an email next morning. You think that I think I had to pay for those tickets? Like, just a good kid, and it just it came real quick, right? That thing about talking about, you know, seeing and, you know, helping them and, you know, get those results. It was just nice. Within a year, I got it. I know it's a special player, but it happened really quick, which was awesome.
Yeah.
And I was only a part of his hockey for 1 year.
It's a neat feeling. Like, I know you've been there and you've coached them last year and all that stuff, but when you see one of your players playing in the National Hockey League live, for me, my first one that I went to was Ryan Wilson.
Mm.
So he's playing in Detroit.
Playing in his golf tournament May 20th, by the way. Yeah? I just talked to him actually 2 days ago.
Oh, nice.
Yeah.
Yeah, he's great. So that was the first one for me.
Mm.
And it was in Detroit. So he got me a ticket and stuff, same as you. And I was sat there, not in awe, but I was like, there's a pride. That I said, and not because I want to say this the right way. It's not the pride that I did that. It was the pride that I had.
You helped him.
For sure. And he wanted me there. And I watched this kid play, like, against the freaking Detroit Red Wings, man. And it was cool. And then I went to see Aaron and Webby and a few guys like that. And it's a real cool thing when they actually want you there. And, you know, I was able to take my kid to those games. And it was a pretty cool thing. So, okay, so now with the coaching, you said you like to help guys. So, and I think this part is really important for kids when they come through, because you said earlier is like you want kids that want to be helped. So, if I'm a kid, I just want to change it from being a coach. If you're a kid now, what is it that what are the things that are going to get the coach attracted to a kid? Like, and I'm talking, you go any direction you want. An easy kid to coach that you want to help?
There's a few things that I look for that I'd like to see. And I'll use eye contact. It's very simple. When somebody's talking to you, don't be looking up around in la-la land. So I know you're engaged and you're listening. That's number one. And I love the kids. I know this is old school, but when they're changing on their shifts, they come... When they're coming off, they're giving everything they got, and they're going to blow snow.
Oh, you mean like when they're actually making a line change?
Yeah.
100%.
That kid, to me, I like those kids.
He gets little details.
He got it.
I got to get off. Someone else got to get on.
So let me go as fast as I can.
Yeah.
Like, I've had a kid that came, and he almost fell, like, into the gate because he came so fast. And we were like, hey, like, I get it, but, like, just slow it down a little bit. But those are the kids, I think, that get some details and – So it's I know it's only two things, but isn't that crazy that you can just see two things, and those are the guys that I think I want to be around, because I know they're listening, and they're getting some details.
There's a care factor.
Cares
just shows, right?
Yeah.
So in me, I would say the same thing. I when I get a group out there, and they don't speak. Like if I say, "Do you guys understand the drill?" and I get, they're all trolling for flies.
Yeah.
I make them speak. Because, like, for a player, like, if you're a coach and you say something to me and I just look at you, the answer to me, like,
yeah,
or to you is probably, like, maybe you don't understand. But if you say yeah, then yeah is yeah.
Yeah.
It's like,
if
yeah.
If you ask a question, you're usually looking for a response. Yeah. Yeah. And as coaches, I think we need to ask more questions, not dictate so much. If we ask... Well, you can use your son here. Like, he comes to the rink one day and I just say, hey, how was your day at school? He's automatically engaged a little bit more with me, because I'm not saying, hey, dipshit, you're -3 last night. You know, let's go watch some video. You think that matters right now? You know what I mean? So, like you said, asking questions and not always hockey questions is a good thing as well.
Yeah. Would you agree? And I'm asking this, I'm not looking for an answer. I'm looking for an answer.
I can give you one if I have it.
Yeah, that's no, but I mean, I'm not looking for you to answer my way. Would you agree with this? I find the most successful kids that I teach, and I think that's probably goes around, would be the kids that are willing to work on the thing that they don't like to do. they work on the thing. I don't want to say relentlessly, but they will put the time into it. Like they don't like not being able. Like if I said, Andy, we got to work on some skating. Like you're going to be there, or just some little details. Like it might be a kid picking up pucks off the wall. He's just not good at like actually spending the time and asking questions and figuring it out. Would that be a fair statement?
For sure. I think you always got to work at the things you're not good at. But with that being said, you always got to continue to work on the things you're good at too. Because it's one thing, like we talked about earlier with my skills were always there, but I felt they slipped through the years because I didn't work on them all the time. Not that they slipped. I'm trying to use the word. They weren't refined. And it was easy to get back, but I think you constantly got to keep on working on things. Obviously, your deficiencies need to be worked on, but also the things you're good at, don't ever take it for granted that they just stay there. If you're a great skater, continue to get better even. Like, just don't be satisfied, I guess I'd say, with having the best shot. You know, keep on working at it. Then obviously, like you said, those kids that realize what they're not good at and want to get better at it, that's a great thing.
Yeah. Yeah, you got time for that kid, eh?
Oh, yeah.
So the opposite of that is where is it where you – I don't want to say lose a kid, but, like, because I'll just go my perspective with training guys. I've got some patience, like a little bit. I got some patience. I got some margin for maybe your house isn't the greatest house to come from today. Maybe this may, you know, a couple excuses for you, but at the end of the day, it's like you're going to start losing me pretty quick if I don't get a certain response or a certain effort level. So what, like, and I'm talking like in the OHL.
Well,
like
I use the adage, everybody has a bad day. Everybody has a day where they're not themselves. Everybody says something one time that they don't mean. Everybody's allowed to make a mistake, is what I'm saying. So it's when it keeps on being repeated and it's the same and it's the same and it goes on and you're trying to help and you're trying and you're trying and it's just not working. That's when it's time maybe for us to move on. You know, that's how guys get traded. That's how guys get sent down or, you know, things happen. So it's, I'm fully aware that young kids make mistakes and I have zero issue with that. But if you keep on making the same ones over and over and over, and that's on and off the ice both, then we're going to have an issue. And, you know, it's not just me. It's you're going to have an issue with your teammates. You're going to have an issue all, you know, all around.
Yeah. Well, and then it comes down to like when, and I think maybe I want to go this way right now is, you know, when you go, a kid that comes into the OHL, guys are in a rush. They want to be 16. Everyone wants to be a 16-year-old kid, and then they realize they don't get necessarily as much ice.
Everybody wants to be a flanker on the power play. Yeah. Okay? Everybody does.
From day one.
Guess what, guys? There's only two. There's three other spots that need to be played. And you can make a lot of money and have a lot of fun in those other three spots. So it's okay, mom and dad. He's net front today. It's not a big deal.
Yeah, or he's PK.
Oh, yeah, we forgot about that, eh? Forgot about that. Yeah.
Make a lot of money doing that too?
Yes.
Yes. So yeah, so the kids come into the league and it's like there's it's hard. These kids are stars. Most of them come from being stars, especially your high
picks.
They're
all captains.
They're all captains, yeah.
They're all stars.
Yeah. So what I don't know if you can even answer this, but what is the difference between like you get a high pick that maybe doesn't turn out or you get a kid like a peer on your team that was a late pick. I don't even know if he was drafted, right?
Nope.
Okay, he wasn't drafted. He's actually a good player on your team.
Real good.
Yeah. Do you think sometimes it's because the skills there, do you think that's an attitude thing? Or do you think
everybody develops at different times. You know, I'll use Piercy as an example if you brought him up. So this is just...
Noah Morneau.
Same.
Another one.
Same thing. I didn't know Piercy before he came on an invite. I had no idea who the kid was. I had heard that he was great in some summer hockey in Toronto, and we were like, God, we should probably bring this guy in. So I dug a little deeper and said, well, how was he the year before? Once again, he grew. He was 5'1". He was something crazy as a 16-year-old just with good skill, but he couldn't handle it because he was 5'1". And then he grew a little bit, and everything kind of caught up. And now all of a sudden, you had a guy as a 19-year-old had 80 points, I think, in our league. Like that. So it's so funny that we just talked about when it happens, and not that size is everything. I'm not saying it is, but it's funny how people grow and things just happen, and crazy.
Yeah.
So, but okay. Guess what?
Yeah.
He's an unbelievable kid. You'd love him to death. I would recommend you'd have him on this podcast because he's one of the funniest human beings. He's a joke teller.
Yeah. Ginger.
He's a ginger. He's a proud ginger, a proud Jew. Everything tied up, he will make you laugh.
That's awesome.
And it is a good time.
Yeah, that's awesome.
He's a great, great kid to be around.
Yeah.
Which makes it even...
Well, it's the best.
It's awesome. Yeah.
So you get a kid that comes in, and it can be very frustrating for kids, but kind of talking about, like, if guys that want to be pros, like, there's that adjustment your first year or two. Some guys, I mean, you had some rookies this year that had great years, and yeah. I don't know if it's because of your system or just they're coaching, that good.
Remember?
Oh, yeah, it's the coaching. Yeah, it's the D coach.
Yeah.
But they're obviously very good players. So, you know, they maybe didn't get that first year punch in the face like a lot of guys get, like that frying pan right across the face, like, this is hard, right? Maybe they'll get it next year. Who knows?
Everybody will get it at some point.
Yeah. So
some maybe not, but it's very few.
Very few.
Very few.
Yeah. So what, like, and then if you're gonna play in the NHL, that's gonna happen again several times. So what is it like, you think, going back in your days, watching kids as a coach, are there any attributes that you see that
we're gonna call this
a pro?
The frying pan effect?
Yeah, the frying pan effect.
how to navigate that? Basically is kind of the question. Well,
that, and it's like, I don't, like, I just don't, I know that people don't, like, when my son left, you know, myself, Dalton, Zach, Dalton Proud, Zach Cassian, you know, guys would say, this is how our careers were, and this is what's going to happen. And what do you think he probably, and he was like, oh, okay, I know this. Okay, I got it. And then you think when it actually happened, like, yeah, you're going to ride the pine for about, you know, the next 27 minutes. It wasn't like, oh, okay, that's cool. It's like, you know, it's that, oh, this is reality, right? And it's like, some guys get stuck in it, some guys can't handle it, but, and I'm just saying, like, from a pro, it's going to happen over and over. It's like, do you see attributes that someone, they get it? Like, they have to get it.
Well,
it's,
I think, like, it goes back to their character. You know, as a person, yeah, we all want to play. We all want to play 20 minutes. We all want this and we all want that. So how do you deal with stuff when you don't get it?
Right on. That's the answer.
Right? So I guess as coaches and scouts and general managers, we all look for people with great character. What's great character? Different to everybody once again. Right? Everybody thinks this is good character. This, you know, it can go on and on and on. So that guy that I'll use Woodall. Our rookie D-man there came up after the Vipers. You know, local kid, a really nice kid. And, you know, he's dressed for game 4 against Kitchener. And he was our 7th D. And I flat out said to him before the game, I said, listen, I don't know if you're going to get a shift tonight. I'm going to tell you right now. So I'm not going to blindside you. Which is great. I said, I'm sorry. I don't know if you're going to get one tonight, kid. I don't know. I said, but if you do, just be ready. I know it's going to be hard because you might be sitting there for a while. And he honestly looked at me and said, thank you. I will be ready. It's sometimes it's the blindsiding that'll get you. But, you know, it's one, because I've been there before. I know how it felt. And it wasn't fun. So I think just that conversation, and I think it'll help him realize that, hey, I do care about you. And I care that you're going to sit here and you're going to cheer and you're going to get up when a guy blocks a shot and you're going to tap the boards. That's good character. But I think that character needs to be nurtured and helped sometimes for it to come out.
Yeah.
Does that make sense? I know it's a little rambly.
It makes total sense because, like, I always go back. Like, I'm very thankful, grateful that I was able to share my experience with my kid and the kids that I train to say that this is going to happen. And it's like, because like you said, everyone wants 20 minutes and be on the flank on the power play, but you're 16. And what you forget, you know, but you don't know that you're going to be playing against a 19-year-old kid that was a first, second round pick. That was you 5 years ago, 4 years ago. So it's like, it was preparing them. That was a huge thing. And having that knowledge just to get through it and realize that if you, you know, and that's what I tell the kids is like,
as much as we try and prepare them, it's still going to shock them.
That's what I'm saying.
It's still going to happen.
Yeah. Yeah.
It's just the way it is until we can sit here blue in the face and tell a kid, oh my God, you're going to just wait. Things are going to happen. You're not going to be ready for. We can tell them all, every situation. There's always a new situation. Something happens.
And that was my thing with having that experience to be able to share with the kids that I train. It's like, at least when it happens, they heard it before.
Yeah.
It's like, well, Andy said that. Well, Dalton said that. Yeah, Zach Cassian told me that. Okay,
everything's going to be okay.
It sucks.
But everything's going to be okay.
Yeah.
Basically.
Yeah. And then it's like looking at the game long term now. So, like, you know that if you do the work at 19, 18, 19, you're probably going to be a very good player. But it's in between. It's like your habits, like you were saying. It's your habits that you do on a daily basis when it sucks. When it sucks. When Andy Delmore says, yeah, you're probably not going to get a shift tonight. Do you sit there and actually, are you a team player now? Like, do you actually sit there and you sit there like, hey, we scored. Or do you sit there and you go, okay, like, come on, guys. And you're actually a team guy and you bring the guys up. And
hopefully.
You do your little habits and practice and do the
hopefully,
work.
Hopefully. You can't have 20 perfect players on your team, obviously. But hopefully you got more guys than not that are going to be like that.
Yeah.
I guess I'd say.
And that's the part of the draft process, right? Like, that's where you vet guys out and you realize that these habits aren't going to stick.
A little out of my lane, but I would agree with that.
Yeah. I mean, you don't want a shithead. And that's the message we try to get around kids all the time. It's like kids and parents, it's like, make sure you have a clue, man. Like, character is a big thing. A lot of people think, some people actually think it's not, but it's actually a big deal. Yeah. Unless you're Connor McDavid, you get away a lot more.
Well, even Connor McDavid, I think if he was a dickhead, guys wouldn't want to play with him.
Yeah.
As good as he is and as great as he is, if he was not a good person, I still think it would get around and people would be like, no, this isn't, you know, you need to change. You are the captain of this team.
Yeah. Yeah.
You know?
Yeah. So what if you were to go back on your hockey career, like, and I'm just talking from a knowledge base, what would you change if you could change anything? Like, would it be anything in your style? Anything in? Were you happy with it?
You want to know what? It's pretty tough to think back and say I should have changed something. It's a tough way to live.
Yeah.
You know, having those regrets, I'd say.
Yeah, yeah.
I have zero regrets.
Yeah. Well, you did something that no one does. Played one game in the NHL.
And I would have been happy with that, just so you know.
Yeah.
So I'm going to say no regrets. There's probably a few things I would have liked to look at differently, but I was young and I was stupid. And
like, what do you mean by that though? Like, you look at differently. Thought you were going to be there for a long time?
I think I could have been, yeah. I think I could have been there longer. And it's so funny, I'm complaining about 300 NHL games. I think it should have been 6 if I would have done a few things differently. But with saying that, I don't want to have regrets. So I can't really complain. You know what I mean? I am happy with the one game. I'm getting greedy that I wanted 6, but I think it could have happened if I did a few things differently. Now, saying that, maybe it didn't. Maybe it would be the same. I don't know. So
that's what Charlie asked me all the time. Okay, Dad, when you played, we were like, Dad, if you played today, what type of player would you be? And it's like, so hard to give that answer because like back when we played, it was such a different game.
Yeah. I mean, it was starting to change a little bit for me. The red line came out. You know what I mean?
Yeah. Yeah, like, I never played with that. Yeah.
So some things started to change in the game when I was still playing.
Yeah.
And it, you know, it's so funny. We talk about Mark Hunter again. He always calls me. He's like, oh my God, I was just watching this game last night. And man, if you would have played right now, you'd be making $5 million a year. I was like, can you shut up?
I'm happy.
Stop telling me this. Well, come on. You know, like you're skating, you're pocketing this and that. And I'm like, Hunts, come on, let's pump the brakes here because I'm not coming out of retirement. Yeah. A, I almost died last year. And B, I'm getting old. So stop.
Yeah, that's hilarious.
Yeah,
Eric, did you have a note? Do you have anything?
Okay, so the other attribute that I think can help young players right now. So I'll go with two parts on this. I'll start with the skating part of the game, and I asked this question. I can ask you guys right now. If you told me your top five players in the NHL, just off the top of your head, I guarantee you're going to say McDavid.
Yeah.
Kale McCarr,
yeah.
Nathan MacKinnon,
yeah.
Give me your next two. Just say them out loud.
I'll go with a Crosby.
Crosby. Matthews. Okay, yeah. Perfect. So we got these five guys. What is their – are they the best skaters on their team?
I would say so.
100%. They're the best skaters in the game. So, as a coach, we all need to be great skaters. It's the way the game is now. You can't just slug along and be a fourth line guy, chip it out, and not get up the ice.
Yeah.
Nobody wants that.
Yeah.
It's not going to happen. Yeah.
So a fourth line's got to contribute now.
You have to be able to skate. So that fourth line guy, if you're a penalty killer, you still have to be able to skate. You got to be able to move lateral. You got to get in lanes. That's all skating right there.
Yeah.
Second part. I think it goes back to those couple of those small things. Like I said, finishing your checks, hitting the net. Let's just turn back the clock a little bit and just remember the game. It's a simple game. Skating, hitting, shooting. It's a real basic game. Sometimes we tend to complicate it, and we have to make sure that young kids especially, let's not give them too much information. Let's just let them go out there and play and have fun and just guide them through in a simple manner. Because the more we try and complicate things, their head's going to be in the wrong spot, and they're not going to make plays when they're thinking about something else. So just simplify and have fun. Because, and having fun is different for everybody. I will say that. But try and have fun, and sometimes just keep it simple.
I was actually going to ask that too. Is what's the role of toughness in hockey? And it's like, it's amazing how. Like you said, it's good to throw a hit once in a while. And it's amazing to me. I went to a Spitz game playing London in the playoffs maybe 4 years ago, 5 years ago. And I sat there and it wasn't a clinching game, but it was pretty close and I couldn't find a hit.
Yeah.
And I'm like, I know. Why was this changed?
But I went to that Dallas-Detroit game.
Yeah.
If I was a season ticket holder, I would have left. And I get it, guys. I'm not saying that 82 games in a regular season would travel – pressure. I get there's going to be nights. I get it. I'm not saying we need to be Johnstown Chiefs every night. I get it. That's not what I'm saying. It's just crazy how the playoffs come and all of a sudden Austin Matthews flippers finally came off. Like I'm saying different things happen, right? So, and I know it can't happen all the time. So toughness, we can start with mental toughness. Being able to deal with everything that's going on in a hockey game, finishing your checks. There's an old, and I was a D-man, and I hated playing against guys that finish their checks. Because you know you're in for a long night.
And guess what? It hasn't changed, right?
Oh, it's changed.
No, I mean wanting to get – you didn't like getting hit every shift.
Nobody does.
That's what I'm saying. That hasn't changed.
No. Yeah, nobody so likes
that,
to get hit.
That has that attribute is –
So I'll use your son as an example. I know he's sitting right here. If you finish your checks in the first period, you might not have to in the third. Because they're going to give you the puck. They're going to panic. Oh, my God. Packers coming. Like, you do it early, you get paid off later. So I know it's hard because sometimes some games it doesn't happen. But I think that you just get in on that forecheck and hit. Like, that's toughness to me, is being able to do those things. Box out, neck front for D-men. That's tough now. Before, it wasn't an option. You went there and it was just a tomahawk fest. You didn't have to box out. You just take the guy's legs out. But now you got to box out. You got to be strong. You let the goalie see that puck. You know, that's toughness. And it's not fighting. We're not even going to bring this up. This is a whole nother thing. You don't have to do that. Toughness, blocking. It's tough to block shots. Put your body on the line. That means you're tough to me.
For sure.
That's for toughness. Sure.
Yeah, that's the day in, shift after shift stuff that you have
that's
to do.
That's tough.
Yeah, it's yeah. The fighting, that happens every now and then, and it's great.
Tough. 2 minutes to go in the game, you're up by a goal. It's tough to get the puck on the wall as a winger. Have no option. Skate, get that red line, and dump it in. After you're out there for 45 seconds. That's tough to do that. That's toughness. That's the way it is now. Then take that hit. You know, some mutants coming across the ice to get you, but you get that red and you get it deep.
Yeah, I agree.
That's tough to me.
Yep. Yeah, because now you got to play. And like more and more, like with the Quebec looking at take whatever that means, they're taking the fighting out. I don't know how you could take any more out, to be honest with you. It doesn't happen very much. But that's just pointing to the direction that you better know how to play hockey if you want to play. You can't just – back when we played, there was not half those guys. There's a lot of guys that would never play.
Well, your fourth line and your 2D – yeah. My first year pro, we had an interesting hockey team. I wish I could bring up the guys with 200 PIMs. I think there was 8 of them. 8 guys with 200 PIMs, a couple over 3.
We were
like,
yeah, we're talking. I was talking to Charlie when he played Jack Eye last year and stuff, and everyone's like, this guy's an animal. And he is. But
I'd like to bring him back 20 years.
And that's what I said. I said, yeah, there was every team that I played with or against, there's 7 or 8 of those guys.
Every team had one.
Everyone.
Maybe 2.
100%. Well, I'm being honest. We would have had 6 to 8 guys that would have said, yeah, I got him.
They were fighting each other
to see
who was going to fight.
Yeah. So funny, but it's different. But it's good.
It's good. It's okay. It's the evolution of the game, and it's not a bad thing. Obviously, with head injuries, and there's, you know, we're going to be in a lot better shape physically, you know, instead of banging each other's heads off the ice. And
well, I'll tell you the one thing I'm thankful for. This is like, remember I said earlier in the podcast about you want to be a hockey player? Yes. And I said, you want to be a hockey player? I'm like, ugh, for my kid.
Yeah.
It's like, these are the things I used to remember is just, you know, the way that the league is now, it's so much better. It's such better hands. I know a lot of people say a lot of bad things about Dave Branch, but I got to say that there's a lot of good that he's done for the game.
Oh, for sure.
100%.
I would agree.
And because, you know, like, him and there's some guys that play a rough game, and getting 30 fights a year is not what I wanted for my kid or for anybody that I know. It's not the hell I've seen guys.
It's unhealthy.
It's not the healthiest thing.
No.
And so you got to learn how to play hockey. It's better. I think the league, like I think they've done, I could tell you some billet stories and I'm sure you've had the same ones where it was like, I don't want my son in that environment.
Yeah.
So I think the league's cleaned up in a lot of different ways for the better.
I would agree.
Yeah.
I would agree.
Which is good. So it's good. Do you have anything else, everybody? Yeah. Yeah, good. No, I'm good.